A celebration of 60 years of AA in Oxfordshire. With time, older memories become less razor sharp, but what is certain is that the first AA meeting in Oxford took place in 1954. This is recorded in the archives of the Oxford Mail and Oxford Times, which went on to add that it was formed by members from Cheltenham and met in the Wesley Memorial Hall in Oxford. But even 20 years later, there were only two meetings in Oxford, and one each in Banbury, Bicester, Burford, Wantage and Whitney. For a long time, large tracts of the county remained an AA desert. Now, 60 years after the first meeting, Oxfordshire boasts of 48 meetings, while Oxford alone has 20. Indeed, our programme suggests that newcomers should be willing to go to any lengths to get what we have. It might have added and travelled any distance, for in those early days, meetings were widely scattered, providing us, of course, with additional meetings among the occupants of each car on the way to and from the venue. Not only were vehicles used for impromptu meetings, one member remembers in a very severe winter trudging along frozen roads, impassable with snow, and meeting members from all different points of the compass, converging on the Lee Clinic for a meeting. Getting to 90 meetings in 90 days was a serious business at that time. And there were other interpretations of going to any lengths. Early group reports refer repeatedly to freezing conditions in winter and sweltering ones in summer, in church or village halls up and down the county. Not all of us, however, suffered too much in early recovery. Attendees to Bampton meeting, 1965-74, when it was succeeded by Burford, were served with coffee and hot sausage rolls by a butler, a huge log fire being provided on winter evenings. Meetings came and went. Some were started for the wrong reasons, personalities before principles, or because there was too much smoking or no smoking at all. But could there be any people more perverse than recovering alcoholics whose meeting survived an international crisis on the American air base at Upper Heyford, during which attendees were required to have a military escort, only to up sticks in high dudgeon when the room used by the meeting was diagnosed a no-smoking zone. The group relocated to Upper Heyford Village Hall, which, needless to say, subsequently also became a no-smoking area. In the meantime, other groups proliferated, including one or two designated as women's groups, though of course never exclusively so, mothers and toddlers groups, a couple of meditation groups, and the popular Friday breakfast meeting that offers croissants with his coffee. But what about spreading the message? Though as specified by our traditions, it was found that AA ought never be organized, it was discovered that some judicious structuring would help us in this task. Thus, intergroups were created to take over the work of the central office, General Service Office, since 1969. South Midlands Intergroup, SMIG, was formed in 1968 with Oxford as its core. It continues to meet approximately every 3 months, attended by a group service representative, GSR, hopefully from every group, to discuss problems, progress, and the best way in which most effectively to spread the message. At this stage in 1969, SMIG's area stretched out to Cheltenham, Cirencester, Worcester in one direction, and Aylesbury High Wycombe in the other. When regionalisation came up for discussion in 1974, the feeling was expressed at SMIG's December 1974 meeting that we covered such a large area we were effectively a region. In fact, by 1980, the Southern Assembly to which SMIG initially belonged stretched from Kent to Land's End. This was the year that saw the birth of South Midland Region, composed of several intergroups, including SMIG. By then we had burgeoned into 34 rather widely scattered groups, and in the coming months it was decided to divide ourselves into three: Smig, Thames Valley, and Chiltern and Thames. The nitty-gritty running of the South Midland group, involving a chairman, secretary and treasurer, is vital for each and every one of us, for without a healthy centre, AA could not be held together. Those who do such service say, without exception, that working together for a common aim has broadened and strengthened their life. As we go forward, new officers are needed, such as electronic communications and archives, and we must never forget the life-enhancing work that small group who organise the convention does. Yet more service is possible for those who volunteer to be regional representatives and officers or delegates to the annual AA conference in York. Initially, the main means of first contact with AA in many areas was through the Samaritans, who held a list of local AA members whom they could contact in case of need. Individual members agreed to have their name in the British Telecom directory, and quite a few of us remember getting in touch with a certain Norman T. or Ken H., listed as Alcoholics Anonymous Oxford Group in the late 1970s and early 80s. A huge step forward was taken in the early 1980s when we first established a dedicated telephone number and instrument. The instrument was located in Simon House, a hostel for the homeless, and once a week our telephone liaison officer, TLO, would go there to change the tape on which was recorded the name, telephone number and hours of the person on telephone duty for that week. The TLO incidentally recalls the necessity to re-record the message on more than one occasion because of the swearing that was going on in the background. It also needed changing quite frequently during the week because of unexpected changes in the available times of those on duty. Misconceptions regarding the purposes of AA were probably even more rife then than they are today. The same TLO recalls a request from a certain Oxford hotel in the middle of the night to collect and remove an inebriated gentleman as he was causing a nuisance. Other callers were even more confused. One responder remembers an inquirer in the middle of the night who became very irate, presumably not getting the answers he wanted to hear. "Right," he stormed at last, "I have your number on this piece of paper and I'm tearing it up so you can't ring me again." Yet another responder recalls a very annoyed inquirer being told we could not deliver a case of wine to his house at 2 a.m. in the morning. A responder's young son, after answering the phone because his parent took too long to do so, announced proudly that he had just saved someone's life by taking the caller's number so that he could be rung back. Another lad suggested they should have two telephones in the house, one dedicated to AA inquiries, so that he would know in advance when he needed to be prepared to offer succour and advice. Later, we began thinking in terms of a 24-hour helpline, and have since progressed from an operator call forwarding to an automatic call responder service, which is both more flexible and cheaper. It's a massive task for the current TLO to provide this 24/7 coverage in a series of 6-hour shifts. But somehow he or she achieves it with a relief list to cover all eventualities. Our telephone service provides undoubtedly the key link between AA and the still suffering alcoholic, or those in recovery who seek meetings away from home. But members of Intergroup cover a whole range of other functions. We volunteer to share our message with a wide spread of organisations in our community, and by this work we deepen our own sobriety. The public information officers do their best to broadcast what we can and cannot do to help the suffering alcoholic. In our 60th year, they are organising a symposium on alcoholism, inviting people from the local authority, government, legal professions and law enforcement. Speakers go into schools, hospitals, prisons and work with the armed services and probation, while liaison officers for these organisations provide much needed links. All speakers ensure that our fundamental principle of anonymity is preserved. An early talk on our local radio station became a little confusing when the two speakers, having given pseudonyms to preserve their anonymity, kept reverting to their own names in the talk. On the subject of names, members have always used their rich imagination to differentiate between those of the same names. For example, over the years, various Johns have been distinguished, such as Professor John, Fisherman John, Irish John, and No Toes John. The latter has now sadly died, but he was a magnificently spruce man who had long sobriety and small boots shining to perfection. He had lost his toes to frostbite when living rough in London. Other names come to mind, such as Badger Bill, a great nature lover, and Mike the Book, who had written one book and was always in the process of writing the next, but will live on with great affection in our memories, inseparable from his nickname. At a more modest but important level, group members undertake to put up AA leaflets in prominent places such as libraries, police stations and church halls, so that while anonymous we become more visible. Modern life provides ever more need to be watchful. One member discovered to their dismay that a well-known supermarket brand of profiteroles contained alcohol, a fact noted in a list of ingredients that required a magnifying glass to read. When the member wrote to the supermarket, the reply came that they thought the list of ingredients was sufficient, sending with the letter a £3 voucher for any inconvenience. However, the member was gratified to see a few weeks later that the offending packet of profiteroles now carried a note in sizable type, "Contains alcohol." Giving up drink does not mean giving up fun. At the annual mini convention, members from all over the region and the surrounding ones congregate to hear speakers, catch up with their friends, and even come away with an enormous pot plant or vivid cushions won in the raffle. One of our longer-term members recalls one in 1968 held in a hay barn near Wantage. 3 years later, in 1971, the mini recorded the princely profit of 47p, but happily it was not ever thus. For years the event was held in a marquee in the gardens of the convent of Norna Gardens, for many years the venue of Oxford's principal and for a time only meeting. Since then it has progressed through various more modern venues to the present Exeter Hall in Kidlington. The enjoyment members get from coming together is also exemplified by other activities such as Didcot's AA Christmas celebrations. Didcot Bop, It's a Cracker and the 12 Step Boogie are just three of the alcohol-free parties that have been held. And at opposite climatic conditions, the Oxford AA Campout has proved a popular event. One regular attendee commented to his neighbour while sitting around the fire and watching the sun sink behind the trees that where else could 100 alcoholics congregate without even one police siren? Finally, because of AA's bottom-to-top structure, SMIG has sometimes added its own benign influence to the fellowship's message. Back in the 1980s, a decision was made to rewrite the Who Me leaflet. The result so incensed certain SMIG members that a decision was made to rewrite it, with the result that it's still in circulation today. "Let's not louse this thing up," Dr. Bob is recorded to have said. Indeed, let's not. And so one of AA's most important phrases remains, "When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that I am responsible. Finally, it is well worth repeating AA's 12 promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will slip away. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.